From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. You're listening to Scott Wheeler and Through the Looking Glass on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello and welcome to Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler. And we have some very interesting subject matter today with a very intelligent and insightful interviewee. We'll get to him in just a moment. In February, congressional representative from Georgia named Marjorie Taylor Greene called for a national divorce on her Twitter account, citing irreconcilable differences with the Democrats and their blue states. And she recommended separating red states from blue and essentially divorcing the country and starting a smaller republic, as she suggested. Of course, Democrats and their media allies howled, quote, just a highly influential Republican congresswoman calling for a second civil war on President's Day, responded CNN political commentator and former New York 17 representative Mondaire Jones, adding that Green was seen here failing that mental competency test Nikki Haley only wants to impose on those 75 and up, unquote. Well, J. Michael Waller has thought a lot about these issues and has written about them extensively. He's a senior analyst for strategy at the Center for Security Policy. His areas of concentration are propaganda, political warfare, psychological warfare, and subversion. He is a former professor at the Institute of World Politics, a graduate school in Washington, D.C., a former instructor with the Naval Postgraduate School. He's an instructor, lecturer at the John F. Kennedy Special Warfare Center and school at Fort Bragg. Welcome to Through the Looking Glass on TNT Radio, Dr. Waller.
Hi, Scott.
It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's great. There's a whole lot going on in the world here, and it's really hard to make sense of for just about everybody.
Indeed, it is. In fact, we read constantly, even among the right, you have divisions of people who are, some are pro-Putin, some are anti-Putin and Russia, some favor the Ukrainian war, and some are questioning it. And it's getting very confusing, even for people who are astute to viewers of the news, to actually keep an understanding of what side they should be on in terms of pro-U.S. Sure. policy and patriotic support of America. And we're increasingly, this is one of the things that is increasingly dividing the country along political lines. And the division is right. Not new, but it has become, of course, as you know, more pronounced in recent years. What are the specific ways in which the political left is contributing to the division of the United States, would you say?
Well, that's what they do. I mean, they're everything they've done is to push division, and this gets to the whole problem of what's emerged over the past 20 years in our country, at least, is this critical theory and cultural Marxism, and all their purpose is to just tear people apart, find everything that divides us, and magnify that, and make it impossible for people to unite together and to agree to disagree or to find some mutual solution. So you get this polarization of the country, and then people are saying, this is irreconcilable, we need a national divorce.
Is it irreconcilable in your estimation?
I don't know. I mean, people are always going to have differences. The problem is we have an entrenched administrative state that makes up a sizable part of the population that the rest of the taxpayers are paying for, whether they wish to or not. And it's becoming more and more and more intrusive in our lives. And so you have where states used to be able to decide their own policies for themselves by the citizens of those states, you have the central government doing it now. and using the force of the central government, whether it's the bureaucracies or whether it's the power of the purse or whether it's the FBI and other entities, to try to force some kind of central control over the way people live.
It is, and it seems like the identity politics has become the primary weapon, but now that it's been so effective, there's a lot more to it, isn't it, than just the separating people based on race, gender identity, things like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I kind of missed the old Marxism where it was just people fighting over economics and money. It was easier back then. But what these other guys have done is where you had the classical Marxism was, you know, the poor against the rich, you know, the proletariat to overthrow the rich bourgeoisie and all that nonsense that went with it. And then the encroachment of it as sort of greater and greater state control over the economy, you know, all kinds of socialists from Lenin to Mussolini, you know, and Hitler all experimented with this. But now the fight is not about the poor versus the rich, because the rich, the Marxists are rich now, and they have other points of conflict that they're pushing, which is identity politics, as you just said, hyphenated Americans, race, sex, and then whatever gender it means anymore. And they're forcing this on us, whether it's the central government or it's big companies like, you know, certain like Delta Airlines or Starbucks or Apple and Amazon and Google. And they're forcing this on us to the point of using censorship, to the point of taking away people's ability to make a living, taking away their banking ability. Their ability to get paid, their ability to pay others, and there's no recourse for this. And when you have a central government permanent apparatus that buys into this and acts as an enforcement arm of this, and you have lawyers out there constantly litigating this against the public, then you're getting a situation where you have a Marxist revolution of a cultural nature, to change our whole culture against us and to anathematize and marginalize and destroy those of us who are pretty happy with our traditional values.
Sort of isolating, saying that only one group's point of view or perspective should be banned entirely and everything else is fair. National thinking.
Right. Yeah. And you must think this way or you cannot get a job. That's what it's coming to. You see this with government employees. You see this with employees of certain airlines, of certain big data companies. And just think, all these big data companies know everything about us. They know where you live. They know what your phone number is. They know what all your websites that you like. They know all your financial transactions, everything you buy online, every time you take your cell phone with you, they know where you are. These companies are being taken over by, they were always to the left in the past, you know, 10 or 20 years, but they're taken over by this woke left that wants to impose identity politics on everyone.
And has social media, social media has contributed to that, to allowing people to isolate themselves in echo chambers that provide support for whatever extremist view they have.
Right, right. And not just that echo chamber, but also a censorship chamber. Until Elon Musk bought Twitter, and then he exposed all of this that was going on in Twitter. The purposeful censorship of everything from conservative points of view to traditional Judeo-Christian values to how to combat disease and stay healthy.
And the left and
who is manipulating that? But the FBI. Come on,
you know, the FBI the behind
working
it.
With the, yeah, you saw with the Twitter files.
And the government, the Democrat Party, and the media, the Fourth Estate, playing right along with it and allowing it as an acceptable means to stop disinformation and misinformation, as they call it. And yet, now that it's been exposed, there's no evidence that the media is abandoning that previously held position. In fact, they're saying it never really happened. Is this not pretty strange?
Yeah. Imagine that. All this terrible stuff that they did never happened at all. This is just like Orwell in this book, 1984, that memory hole, right? It's your government controllers. In that case, they were controlling all data, all history, all media. And what they no longer wanted people to remember, they threw down what was called the memory hole for permanent destruction. And that's what's happening here with big media. Try Googling a lot of stuff when you and I, years ago, we worked for the same news organization. And try Googling our stuff. It's not there. You can't find these things on the search engines anymore.
It's not there. That's very true. In fact, when Hillary Clinton in 2015, and when Hillary Clinton, it became clear she was going to be the Democrat nominee, I recalled a former colleague of ours named L.J. Davis had written a very extensive piece about the financial corruption and Clinton's background. And back in the mid-1990s is when it came out in the New Republic. It's no longer there. You cannot find it. And in fact, I ultimately discovered that a left winger had purchased the New Republic and took L.J. Davis's seminal article on the Clintons out. He was a lefty. J. Davis was a liberal, I would say, not a lefty. He was a liberal. And they took the article out of the historical record. It was probably one of the most popular articles that ever appeared in the New Republic. It was called The Name of Rose. You can't find it.
Yeah, and the Google's algorithm's doing this to people who don't want their content pulled down. And even DuckDuckGo has gone bad, and which is run by Bing, which is a Microsoft product. So it's this stuff is disappearing. It's being made to disappear on purpose.
Yeah, at some point you have to acknowledge that it is being suppressed intentionally, and including there was a press conference with Bill Clinton back in the late 90s when he was asked about his relationship with China, and his response was very telling. He said, "You'll find no evidence that I've changed policies with regard to China based solely on a campaign contribution." That answer has also vanished from the internet. You can't find it anywhere.
And then they brand you as a crazy because you remember it, or you might even have it in hard copy. But if it's still copyrighted, you have no right to post the full text. And so they're making this. Progressives, if you have, they call themselves that. There's nothing progressive about them unless their kind of progress is a place I don't want to progress to. But they're making people think that what happened never really happened, and that their version of history is the proper version of history and the only version of history. And if you start correcting that, they call you every single name to cripple you reputationally, and there's no defense against it, you know, racist or whatever all the other stuff is. And they're stretching this term of racist to what now the critical theorists, the identity politics people say that unless you're part of an aggrieved minority, you are by definition racist. And there's no way you cannot be a racist.
No way to undefine that. No way.
There's no way a white person or an Asian person cannot be racist inherently as a human being.
So what's
the logic of identity? That's where we get. Well, this is what diversity, equity, and inclusion, the DEI, that's what it's all about. It's designed to, quote, remedy that as a form of reparation for all the systemic racism that has been imposed, you know, decades and centuries ago. And there's no way to combat this. And of course, no one who committed any of those injustices in the past is even alive anymore. But if you're of a certain race that's been identified by the critical race theory people as inherently racist, it's like it's a genetic trait. You cannot get rid of it as far as the critical theorists are concerned. So when senior Pentagon officials are talking about reading Ibram X. Kendi, he's a cultural Marxist who is a so-called philosopher about critical race theory. And this is mandatory reading by our generals at the Pentagon and by our senior people at CIA and FBI and across government and across business. And it is the theory and philosophy of diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, which is now being imposed on everyone. So it takes away the whole merit system and puts forward a new type of supremacy over everybody else, where certain groups of aggrieved minorities, whether it is race or ethnicity or sex or gender, and the definitions are constantly changing, this is being imposed. It's a cultural Marxist revolution.
We'll take a short time out. When we come back, we'll ask Dr. Waller a couple of questions with regards to past elections and future elections, and what are the chances of having a truly fair election in 2024. We'll be right back with more on Through the Looking Glass on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Jeremy Nell.
Now, paranoia is also one of those things that leads you to locking your door at night, or having a gun under your pillow if you're in an area that might have high crime. Paranoia is also a good thing. And as Gavin De Becker says, there is a gift in fear.
You know, the word paranoia, I mean, you have to stick with the kind of the medical terminology or the medical definitions for these things. I mean, we use that word improperly, really. I mean, anyone wouldn't say it's improper because it's just part of the culture to take words and apply them to different things that they were originally intended. Like psychotic is one of those, cognitive dissonance. Like conspiracy theorists is another good one like that. That nobody really, really is referring to the true definition of conspiracy. And it's just turned into anything that is against the mainstream, anything that contradicts the mainstream thought, which is usually presented either by authority, by government, or by the media. And it doesn't matter what it is. It's like if the government or the media said that the ocean was made out of chocolate syrup, and somebody came along and said, well, no, it isn't, it's actually salt water, they would be a conspiracy theorist.
Jeremy Nell on today's news. Talk TNT Radio.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
The only real prison is fear, and the only real freedom is freedom from fear. Lighting the fuse for freedom, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler, broadcasting on TNT Radio. And joining me is Dr. J. Michael Waller. He is an expert on so many things, but especially he has been one of the among people who are studying what's taking place in the United States at this moment with this cultural Marxist cultural revolution taking place. He has been one of the astute observers who's written about this extensively. Going into the break, Dr. Waller, I wanted to ask you about if there's any chance that we have a fair election in 2024. And let me provide the background on that thinking, because many point to technical glitches in the 2020 election and call those conspiracy theories. And of course, nobody knows for sure what happened. But one thing we can say for sure is that the media repeating for 4 years from 2017 to 2021 that Russia had interfered in the 2016 election and that Trump was an illegitimate president, based on a manufactured lie by the Democrat Party, that made the election unfair by any standards. They repeated a lie that was manufactured by the Clinton campaign for 4 years and are still repeating it and still making this outrageous claim that Putin preferred Trump over Hillary Clinton in 2016. And so that made the election unfair, even before you get to illegal voting or voting where Democrat governors in states like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and elsewhere, where they allowed to votes without getting the approval of their state legislators, even before you get to the technical aspects of the election being unfair, there was this, the propaganda from the left. So with all of that in perspective, what is your analysis for the 2024 election?
Well, it's kind of like Bill Clinton saying it all depends on what the word is. And it's sort of also, it's now what the word fair really means, because what has happened right under our noses is a rigging of the way votes are cast and counted that are generally legal and generally by the rules. There are new rules. They're obscure rules. The Republican Party really hadn't paid attention to it, but ballot harvesting, for example, and certain of these the way votes are counted and not counted, they are the rules. So the left that put those rules in are playing by their rules, and the Republicans went along with it up until 2016. So that's one problem.
The Republicans went along with it. Yeah. Go ahead.
Just by being Republican, you know, just by being status quo, going along to get along. So now Republicans are saying, hey, we should harvest ballots too. Well, that's really going to make a mess of what's left of our democratic system, but that's where it's headed. So that's one issue. The other issue is for 96 years, the Democrats never complained about Russian interference in American elections. The Kremlin has been interfering in our elections since the 1920s. So for somebody who'd been profiteering off deals with Putin, selling our uranium to Russia, all these other things, to suddenly come out and say, oh, the Russians are interfering in our elections. Well, yeah, you know what? They always do in almost every one of our presidential elections. And they did it through the Democratic Party.
And the media had no problem with that.
No problem at all. And you even had in the 2016 election, you had Angela Davis, an old Soviet trained tool of the revolutionary far left. She was trained by the East Germans and the Soviets. She went on RT, Putin's TV channel, in the summer of 2016 to say, we're not going to run our own candidate this year, meaning Communist Party candidate. Whether we like it or not, we're going to support Biden because we're going to get more from him by supporting him. So none of the Revolutionary Communist Party, the old Communist Party USA, none of them ran a protest candidate that year. They all got behind Joe Biden's campaign.
And what's so bizarre is, as you pointed out, they've never objected, especially even in the 1984 election of Reagan, where Kennedy sent one of his lieutenants over to talk to, I believe it was Andropov at the time, who was the Soviet premier, about helping them defeat Reagan. Even once those records became public, I think the professor Paul Kanger wrote quite a bit about this. There was no objection. There was no concern. And Kennedy was still alive when it was revealed that this happened. The more recent example, which I pointed to so frequently, was in 2012. The DCI, Clapper, testified under oath to Congress that Putin interfered in the 2012 election also. And you had the hot mic video of Barack Obama telling Medvedev, tell Vlad I'll be more flexible after the election. This is my last election. And yet there was no outrage. There was narrowly any coverage of Obama saying that. There was no retrospective outrage about it when the Democrats manufactured this lie that Russia preferred Trump in 2016. And yet, just as you've said, they never complained at all, ever, when Russia was helping Democrats. When they didn't help Trump in 16, they just said that he did. And Putin enjoyed this. His poll numbers went up when the Democrats started pretending to be against him. His poll numbers in Russia went up. And so just a very bizarre, as you were saying earlier, there's no frame of reference for any of this. You can't get your mind around it.
When you have a CIA director, the current CIA director, Bill Burns, when he was head of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, he had kept a portrait of Alger Hiss on his wall.
I didn't know that. That is astounding.
Yeah. So, Alger Hiss was a Soviet spy from the 1930s to the 1940s through World War II. He designed the Yalta Agreement with it when FDR surrendered Eastern Europe to Stalin and all of this other stuff. The anti-communist people at the State Department, and there were some good ones like George Kennan, real Russia experts, they were kept away from FDR. They had no way to work in how the world was going to look after we defeated Hitler. FDR put it all in the hands of Alger Hiss and people like Alger Hiss.
It is bizarre, this world. What would you say to people? What are some of the legitimate sources of information that you trust that people should go to in order to... we're speaking with Dr. J. Michael Waller, who is a national security expert. Where do you go to get reliable information, and how can listeners get reliable information?
It's really hard because there's so much corruption in the media, left, right, and center. And there's so much unprofessionalism in the media that journalists, especially on TV, are exploited by everybody. And so they get people all wound up. There's very little that's in depth. And so it depends on what the issue is. I'm not talking about wanting to hear what I want to hear. I'm talking about some honest journalism that you can trust. And so that varies really from reporter to reporter. So what I do is I aggregate the news on different, there are different apps for aggregating the news, and I follow certain news reporters on Twitter. Like for example, Catherine Hedges at CBS is a great reporter. Who would ever think to look for CBS as a great source of news? I don't, but she as a reporter is a fine reporter. Then you have a lot of specialty and narrow niche publications online that are excellent, but it really depends on what your issue is or what your issues that you're interested in following, because I really can't say that I go to one place every day that I completely trust.
No, of course not. There really isn't. Even Fox News, which used to be pretty pretty good and solid, reliable, has fallen a great deal, I think. But
I think it's going to get worse pretty soon.
Can you say why?
I just stuff you here, so I don't want to spread rumors, but I don't anticipate it getting any better. Let's put it that way.
Certainly not going to get any better. No, that's unfortunate. But where I think most people, most conservatives get their news from Fox News, but many of them are now, I see on Twitter, a lot of them are walking away from Fox News, and there's really very little alternative the Wall Street Journal, I used to say, was the most important paper in the world, but it's also fallen. And I know the left thinks that of the Financial Times of London, but you can get reliable information from both publications on the one hand, but on the other hand, you also have to be able to filter out the bias. And so you kind of,
right,
if you know what you're looking for, you know how to filter their bias. You understand what it's going to be, but who has that, other than people like us who are in the media, who has the time and ability.
You don't have the time, or the average person doesn't have. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's like, you know, it's like buying a used car almost. Okay, there are some faults in it, but it's still a good deal. I'm going to take it for the faults, but I'm going to discount it a little bit. So there are some guys at Rolling Stone. They're great investigative journalists. As long as you understand their bias, they're honest guys. Some of them. I mean, Matt Taibbi, for example, right? He's not with Rolling Stone, but Mark Schellenberger. I mean, you can see them if they weren't household names, you know, not long ago. I'd followed Matt Taibbi since he was in Moscow in the 90s. And he was always a lefty, but he was always doing great reporting on the KGB, which is my area of concentration then. So I learned to trust him as an honest guy through the through his own worldview. And once you can find that worldview of the person and understand it, then you know what to discount. And okay, well, this guy is good on this, but he's ignoring this because he sees no danger on the left or something. So that's why you have to be super discerning. And I still haven't found the single news place that I would dare trust completely.
Yeah, no, you make a good point. You can find, even on the left, you can find good ones. I've followed Taibbi for a long, decades now. Also, and you have, you point out Catherine Herridge at CBS. She was at Fox News for years. And you have Glenn Greenwald is like a mixed bag. Sometimes he really nails it. He sees a lot of the overreach by the state in the United States. But on the other hand, he's also probably had heavily influenced by the Marxist Cultural Revolution. And so he,
sure. That yeah. He's not a social conservative.
Yeah, yeah, not a social conservative.
And to be fair, a lot of social conservatives are good folks, but I wouldn't really put a lot of confidence in some of because they sort of run too fast. Some of them are great, but some of them run too fast with certain issues and they jump to conclusions. It's like anybody else. Like there's another publication called The Intercept, which is hardcore, you know, Marxist left wing, but a couple of the people who write for it write really good stuff that you can pretty much take it to the bank if you factor in their bias. A lot of the other stuff is sloppy. So like anything like Jeremy Scahill would write on The Intercept, I could just, you know, throw that out with the kitty litter.
So it's
and then you have of course the big media like the Washington Post and the New York Times and the favored reporters there who the CIA and the FBI leak illegally serial leak classified information to almost every day of the week to suit certain agendas. And those outlets are when they say, you know, unnamed intelligence sources, you know, it's a leak from the intelligence community. It's probably real information, but it's got a spin to it. Or some of it might be phony information like the Steele dossier contents.
Yes.
Which brings us back to our original. Yeah. Which brings us back to our original question that we were just talking about at the start. When you have the central government and you have the people who have the ability to surveil and to spy and to keep secrets and then to arrest people, and they are leaking illegally to their favorite people in the media playing political games to try to influence the outcome of an election, you've got criminals running those parts of the government. And if that's not cleaned up, to get back to your earliest question, I don't see how we can reconcile as a country if we're going to have an out-of-control FBI. If we're going to have, you know, the FBI dumped counter-espionage cases against the Chinese and the Russians and everyone else who's spying on us. They dumped kiddie porn ring investigations and child abduction and child abuse, child trafficking investigations in order to put their agents on this January 6th stuff to charge people mostly with misdemeanors. That is a political agenda that's being executed. It's not a national security one, and it's not a law enforcement one.
Well, let me ask you, since we're on the subject of leaks, this Air National Guardsman from Massachusetts, Jack Teixeira, was just arrested this week for leaking these embarrassing documents about Ukraine and Russia and the United States.
Yeah.
What is your opinion? What is there? Do you sense a political motive behind this? And what do you think this is about?
I think it's too soon to tell, but what gives me ample reason for skepticism is you have a very young individual in a rather obscure part of the military, meaning of the national security community, which is meaning the National Guard. These guys have little need for top secret information, except in their very narrow area of concentration. But when you have somebody like that who supposedly has access to these senior level intelligence assessments and very broad worldwide subject matter, a lot of that stuff should have been compartmented, and it certainly shouldn't be with some 21-year-old National Guardsman. So the narrative that's come out,
and he was enlisted. I mean, it wasn't even an officer.
Yeah, did I say officer? I'm sorry. Yeah,
No. I'm just pointing out that it not only was he a young, too young to have had much experience in the Air National Guard. He wasn't an officer, so he didn't have the broader clearances that an officer would have. You might need a clearance.
Yeah, if you're in electronics or communications or maintaining some high tech things, you're going to need a clearance to access that equipment to be able to service it or repair it or use it. But you don't need, you know, what the Israeli secret services are doing with the protesters in their country, or what the South Korea, or what Ukraine's battle plan is. That a 21-year-old enlistment in the National Guard has no right to that. And if he did have a right to it, that shows the sickness of our system, where everything is super secret for no reason at all. Why have it classified if it's going to be distributed to that? That'll mean millions of people have access to this information, and there's no reason for it.
Unless there's no reason for them
to have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's another agenda here. You want to make it look like a white racist, you know, 4chan dwelling, you know, so-and-so. It sort of suits a narrative that the administration wants. So I'm not making allegations because I don't know the facts behind this. I just know what's being reported, and I don't trust what's being reported, because all of the factors in there just make my ears perk up and say there's a bigger game at play.
Something, yeah. And it looks similar to when Julian Assange was leaking stuff that harmed our national security and exposed troops to danger in Iraq. The media loved him. He was great right up until this certain point in 2009 and 2010, when he leaked his first embarrassing documents about Obama and Hillary Clinton, who was Secretary of State at the time. And then within 10 days, Julian Assange went from the man of the hour to being a wanted criminal, and a warrant was issued for his arrest. And it seems like this has happened so many times. The leakers walk scot-free if they're leaking if they're harming national security but helping Democrats, they walk away. If the moment they hurt Democrats in some way, the boom is lowered, and they become fugitives almost immediately. Dr. Waller, I want to thank you for joining us. I know you have to run here at this break, but it's been a real pleasure to have you, and your brilliant insights, as always, have really helped us understand these issues.
Oh, thank you, Scott. It was great talking to you. I hope I didn't cloud things up more than they already are. That's the way the world works.
That's
through the
impossible.
Looking glass, right?
All right. Thanks so much, Dr. Waller. And we're going to take a short time out. We'll come back with more on Through the Looking Glass right after these messages.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Did you happen to catch Joe Biden's interview with NBC's Al Roker just prior to the White House annual Easter egg roll this past Monday morning? Roker asked the president how many more years does he see himself rolling these eggs after 2024? His way of asking Biden to officially announce that he's running for president again. Biden stumbled. At least three or four more, he said. Then he said maybe five, maybe six. And then, as highlighted by Stephen Colbert on CBS's The Late Show, He said this.
I'll either be Roland Egger, you know, being the you know, the guy who's pushed him out.
That's right. That's right, Jack. I got big Easter news. Joe Biden can lay eggs. Point is, I am mentally fit to once again run for president of the United States. What's going on? Where's Jill? Marco, Jill-o.
And folks, this was nothing compared to some of Biden's more serious blunders, but those go unmentioned by the leftists in the media. God help us all. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
From national security to global corruption, you're with Scott Wheeler and Through the Looking Glass on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler. Sans our expert witness today, J. Michael Waller, who's a brilliant analyst and really brought some clarity to some of the issues we're looking at today, such as where do you get legitimate information. It seems more and more difficult to find, and it's only going to get worse as we see the dilution of real news in almost every publication that we read. You have to pick the publication and then kind of sort out the bias, understand where they're coming from. And I've seen this get worse and worse with the Wall Street Journal over the years. So it is, it's not easy, but one good place to start is TNT Radio. As those of you listening are clearly aware, we were talking about domestic threat. We started out the broadcast by talking about domestic threats. And in an investigation I conducted last fall, I think it was, we found that national security analysts, scholars, and a federal indictment reveal that threats from left-wing extremist groups in the United States are more dangerous than right-wing so-called MAGA Republican groups, and that the Biden administration has been using as threats to democracy. The U.S. government, some of the left-wing groups being funded by Russian influence operations to, quote, sow discord, spread pro-Russian propaganda, and interfere in elections within the United States, end quote. That's from some official one official indictment. On July 29th of last year, the Department of Justice announced the indictment of a Russian national for working on behalf of the Russian government to sow discord in the United States from December 2014 until March 2022. Alexander Vitryovich Lanov, a resident of Moscow, together with at least three Russian officials, engaged in a years-long foreign malign influence campaign targeting the United States. Now, so ironic is this, is that they weren't influencing Trump supporters or MAGA. They were actually working. They worked for FSB, the federal, secret police of the Russians. They were working for the Russian government and recruiting left-wing extremist groups, there were a number of groups, political group one, political group two, as identified in the indictment. It turns out it was the Atlanta-based Black Hammer Party, Justice for George Floyd and All Colonized People, also known as People of Color. This is from the Black Hammer Party website. Justice for George Floyd and All Colonized People, end quote, who have died at the hands of white power colonial terrorism, also known as America's racist police system, unquote. That is from the Atlanta-based Black Hammer Party. The group's website states that it exists to take the land back for all colonized people worldwide. Currently, our physical and intellectual labor is being coerced to build for the capitalist white colonial state. This is right from the website of the Black Hammer Party. But it can be redirected to a noble cause, unquote. They couldn't be reached for comment at the time. We did speak to them, but they did not want to provide a comment. Sacramento Bee identified one of the groups as Yes California, an organization formed to promote California's secession from the United States. Now, you think about this. Compare this to the reception of California Yes, which wanted to, and let me be clear, Yes California wanted to secede from the Union when Donald Trump became president. It was an anti-Trump maneuver, and no one in the media seemed to think a thing about it. It was not even hardly covered at all. And the reason was, certainly wasn't mocked the way Marjorie Taylor Greene was, but it also wasn't well covered. And here's why. The reason the media was not cheering Yes, California, the secession movement there in 2017 and 2018, is if California left the Union, they would lose two Democrat senators and about 40 Democrat members of Congress. They would never control the House or the Senate again. And so the Democrats put the kibosh on this without mocking or ridicule, but just put the kibosh on it. For that reason alone, it would mean they had no authority, no power, and they'd never win a national election again. They'd never have the president again without California. Critics have accused the Biden administration of using the levers of the federal government to attack his political opposition by prioritizing what he calls threats to democracy and domestic tranquility. Biden's list of targets has included Trump supporters, election deniers, and quote, white supremacists, unquote. In early September, bathed in a red lit backdrop, we all remember that backdrop, and flanked by two U.S. Marines, Biden told the nation, quote, there is no question that the Republican Party today is dominated, driven, and intimidated by Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans, and that is a threat to this country, unquote. Trump, now a candidate for president, and Biden has called him and his movement a threat to the country. It's hard to believe. It's hard to imagine someone who's done as much damage to the nation as Biden has calling someone else a threat to the country. What he really means is a threat to Democrat Party hegemony, which is control of the United States. That's their objectives. And as I point this out frequently throughout the years, Democrats are always in control. Even when Republicans are in the White House, control both houses of Congress, Democrats are always in control. They control the media. They control the institutions. They can make people hate on command, which they frequently do. That's how they get turned against. You know, I've made this point many times over the years. Donald Trump's 2016 campaign was very similar to Bill Clinton's 1996 reelection campaign, save for a couple of things. It was almost the same. And yet, Trump was considered an extremist, racist, radical, every name you could make up. And I don't particularly like Trump. I think he could have been a better president. I think he was a good president. He could have been a better president, in my opinion. And he could have done a lot of things that would have been made him smarter in his reaction to the attacks coming from the left. But he didn't do that, and that was disappointing. But when you think about this in the terms of what how the left made their people, the Democrats made half the country hate the other side, based on, in most cases, a lie, but just taught them to hate on command. And that's how, and then thereby marginalizing Trump when he was president by teaching half the country that he's illegitimate, hate him on command. And so you really had, Trump had been a Democrat almost his entire life. He had donated millions of dollars to the Democrat Party and to Democrat candidates over the years. He was a lifelong Democrat until he decided to run for president as a Republican. And Democrats, in an instant, in the blink of an eye, made people hate him with such power and passion that it took the country from a very polarized position into this post or Civil War mindset, revolutionary mindset. Something has to be done. The country can't be united anymore, as some experts say. It's possible, but we haven't found an expert who can explain how. We have experts like Barbara Walter, a professor at the University of San Diego, who wrote a book last year saying the polarization was being created by Trump and the right, a ridiculous assessment on its face, because you could see who the haters were. Trump tried to get along with the left after he was elected, and they hated him anyway. They refused to do anything, even when it was in their own interest, because hate became the number one thing. And if Democrats can teach people to hate on command like this, they'll do it for every election. And the media will never be a fair arbiter in general, in aggregate. The media will never be a fair arbiter of whether or not this hate is righteous, or if it's just politically ginned up, which it almost always seems to be. And this happened for decades. The Democrats always said the right were the haters. They're haters. They hated Clinton. They hated Obama. They hated Obama because of his race and all sorts of things like that, having nothing to do with the reality of Obama being a left-wing extremist, dishonest, incompetent, incapable, and the only thing he ever really got done was the effective weaponization of several government agencies, such as the FBI and the IRS, as we historically now know. So that is where it stands, a polarized nation. Biden's Homeland Security, a Department of Homeland Security, has made groups and individuals that Biden considers a threat a priority for investigation. The DHS refused to be interviewed when we contacted them last year when I was writing this report, but they provided a summary of terrorism threat to the United States, which was published in June. It would have been a year ago, June, this a year ago now. National Terrorism Advisory System Bulletin. The bulletin states, the continued proliferation of false and or misleading narratives regarding the current events could reinforce existing personal grievances or ideologies, and in combination with other factors could inspire individuals to mobilize to violence, unquote. That's what the bulletin said. In other words, if you disagree with the Democrat Party, you're a threat. And that's what they want you to believe. That's what the Democrat Party wants you to believe. Disagreement with them makes you a terrorist. Many of the domestic threats listed in the bulletin identify those who question the administration's policies. Some domestic violent extremists have expressed grievances related to their perception that the U.S. government is unwilling or unable to secure the U.S.-Mexico border, unquote. Well, why is it a perception? It's obvious that it's unwilling or unable to secure the U.S.-Mexico border Even the border chief has recently testified to that, despite Alejandro Mayorkas, who is the head of DHS, who claims it was. He's been proved to be a liar on that. Some domestic given a high prolific U.S. Supreme Court case about abortion rights, individuals who advocate both for and against abortion have, on public forums, encouraged violence, including against government religious and reproductive health care personnel and facilities, as well as those with opposing ideologies. And that has happened. The left has been on a rampage, firebombing and destroying U.S. Pro-life organizations. That wraps it up now for Through the Looking Glass on TNT Radio. Join us again next week for another edition. For TNT Radio, I'm Scott Wheeler, signing off.